All opinions expressed here are the views of the speaker, not necessarily those of their hosts, producers, or owners.
Hello, I'm Stuart Alexander. Once again, I'd like to welcome our listeners to Socialist Can, 1 hour left. This is a weekly program that comes to our listeners to discuss various social issues from a very left perspective. This week on our program, we have our regular panelists, which is Alan Mackey, Matt Oren, Deborah Mackey, and myself, Stuart Alexander, your host. Today, we'll be discussing Trump's trade wars benefiting Wall Street, hurting working people. And once again, I'd like to welcome our guests, panelists, for joining the program today. Thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Deborah, I'd just like for you to share just for a few moments what your program Left of Liberal, what you had on, what you were discussing over the this week, and how our listeners can tune into Left of Liberal on a weekly basis. Could you take a few moments for that, Deborah?
Yeah, we have our program at 7 p.m. Central time every Monday, and it's called Left of Liberal with hosts Alan and Debbie Mackey. We also have a Facebook page with the same name. Look for the White Peace Poppy, and because there are other Facebook pages with Left of Liberal. Our phone number is 512-517-2708, and then we also have a an email, leftofliberal@outlook.com, and join us every Monday.
We're going to have a very interesting program this coming Monday, Stuart. Daryl Rankin from Manitoba, Canada, who's heading up international solidarity and here in North America with the Sudanese people who are engaged in a revolution right now, is going to be our guest.
And then we had a Green Party candidate from Canada, Janice Fraser, on talking. And it was an interesting program.
The programs coming up should be very interesting, and also I'm looking forward to joining the program as a guest in the very near future. And once again, I encourage our listeners to tune in and listen to that every Monday, listen to Left of Liberal. As I had mentioned, our program today, we're discussing Trump's trade wars benefiting Wall Street, hurting working people. And Alan, you had posted some information that's caught my attention. You post a lot of things on your various blog posts, a lot of things that you post on Facebook. Sometimes it's received, sometimes it's not. I can mention that it's always received very openly by me because it always gives people food for thought. But I'll start with Alan. Alan, these trade wars, how does Trump's tariffs affect the working class here in the U.S. and the working class in other countries? Alan?
Well, trade wars, including tariffs and sanctions and all these things, always hurt working people the most. And it's no different now with Trump's so-called tariffs. Even though most of his tariffs haven't been implemented yet, the effects are, you know, staggering. Today, the New York Times had a great big article in its business section, a full-page article. It's actually two pages. It's continued towards the back about how the Chinese tourism has dropped 12% since Trump has been doing all of this. And obviously, if the tourism drops 12%, that means the people engaged in the tourist industry in New York are going to be out of work, and their incomes are going to fall. And the capitalists in general, they use these trade wars as an excuse to enforce austerity measures on the working class, whether there's a reason for it or not. And we see this happening. I saw it explained today by Richard Wolff, and the Labor Department says that wages went up by 0.3%. But what the Labor Department didn't point out is that the number of hours worked by workers went down 0.3%. So workers have actually lost wages. Trump claims the economy is getting better, but all these companies are laying people off, using the excuse that these trade wars are making it hard for them to compete. And so far, you know, if you go to the stores or any place where you have to buy things, the prices are already going up. There's really no reason for them to go up, at least not yet, as a result of these tariffs and the trade wars that are going on, because the effects haven't even come into existence yet. And yet the big monopolies are using this as an excuse to raise prices and lower wages and lay people off and reduce working hours. So, you know, this is hurting people all the way around. And, of course, the Chinese workers are going to be hurt, as well Mexican workers and workers in Japan, because as the prices of the products coming in from those countries rises, people are going to buy less. So that means people in those countries will be producing less for the American market. And it's going to hurt everybody. It's already hurt the farmers. The farmers are suffering severely as a result of these tariffs that Trump has imposed, because China's not buying soybeans and other grains from the United States and Canada. You know, there are no other markets where these farmers are going to be able to sell their products. So, it's hurting everybody. Even the small business people who Trump claims that back him, they're, beginning to wonder what's going on, because their businesses are suffering. You take a doctor or a lawyer or anybody else in a profession, if working people don't have the money to spend, they're not going to be using their services. It's as easy as that.
Deborah, what's your take on that? The same question I was asking Alan, how does Trump's tariffs affect the working class in the U.S. and the working class in other countries? What's your take on it, Deborah?
Well, I think, he pretty well covered it, but he was also talking about the Chinese travel to the United States. The newspaper, I guess it's the New York Times, said that 2,900,000 visitors came to the U.S. in 2018, and that was down 3.2 million from 2017. The average amount spent during the day is 6,700, or during the stay is 6,700, and which makes a decrease in spending in the New York City first quarter of 2019 at minus 12%. So yeah, it's definitely going to affect jobs, the tourist industry, and restaurants, businesses, mm-hmm. that these people, the hotels, and it's going to hurt everybody eventually.
Matt, I'm looking at Trump's tariffs, and I would like to ask you, these tariffs will create higher prices for goods sold here in the U.S. However, aren't tariffs a tax that would be passed on to consumers here in the U.S., Matt?
Absolutely. I mean, you slap a tariff on something that's being imported, and that price increase is immediately passed on to the consumer. It'll result in higher prices here. And once the retaliation sets in, which is pretty much guaranteed, it'll result in higher prices for workers in China, in Mexico, et cetera, et cetera. One thing that is also resulting is a kind of restructuring of trade and relations generally. I give you the Mexican example. Trump slaps a tariff and he says, this is basically, we're going to do this unless you do certain things that we want to do. Well, there are various possible responses. One is a retaliatory tariff, which they did. Another is to try to appease Trump, which they did, in militarizing the Mexican-Guatemalan border. Third is to look to try to make new trade arrangements, which they are doing with China. So they're doing all those things. The thing is that when the U.S. government slaps on a tariff or a sanction or whatever, people start looking for the exit doors and try to find alternative markets where they're not going to be hit with the tariff. The soybean farmers that were selling to China have been replaced by Russian soybean farmers. And so, yeah, short term, you have the situation in which everybody gets to pay higher prices because the you know, tariff revenues are going to these governments. And, you know, it's you have a basic slowdown in trade between the U.S. and other countries. Between the other countries, however, you actually have an uptick in trade going around the U.S. So the long-term trend is a restructuring of trade to avoid the U.S. Okay, and that is a kind of a indirect or implicit sanction on the U.S. When the Russians replace U.S. soybean farmers with their soybean product, that's a kind of an indirect sanction on the U.S. And you're going to see more and more of that. Again, the Mexican government is in talks with the Chinese government about shipping some Mexican oil the way Venezuelan oil is shipped out to China in return for Chinese goods. So the long-term effect is that you begin to have a regime of restructuring trade that is in effect a counter-sanction on the United States, and you're going to see more and more of it.
Alan, could you explain to our listeners how, when we say that tariffs are basically a tax that would be passed on to consumers, a lot of times people think of a tariff, many people don't even understand what a tariff is, but can you explain to our listeners how tariffs work in regards to in the various markets, Alan?
Well, like if automobiles are being imported from China at say $10,000, and then you impose a 5% tariff on that, that's an additional tax on that $10,000, and so it increases the price by 5%. In the case of Mexico, where Trump says if Mexico doesn't do as he dictates, they want to increase, they want to put a tariff on that will be at 25%, which would mean if you pay a dollar for bananas, then you're going to be paying $1.25. You know, that may not, to these rich millionaires and billionaires, that doesn't really mean anything because they can afford all this. So it means absolutely nothing. But for the average working person, you know, this is going to, all the business journals I've been reading have been saying that if Trump places his tariffs the way he's talking about, it could increase the cost of living from $600 to about $900 a year for the average working class family. And that's a heck of a lot of money. You know, right now people are having trouble making ends meet. And if you have this additional tax placed on goods and, you know, this is going to create a really tough situation, really squeeze working people. And that's what it's really meant for. The tariffs are, Trump knows what he's doing. He's working on behalf of Wall Street, and they want to squeeze working people. And like Matt said, they want to change the whole way the international economy is working. And the United States wants to be the main dictator of everything. And that's the whole meaning of what Trump is doing. Trump wants to set the stage for the United States to dictate policy to every country. And it looks like it's beginning to backfire because, like Matt pointed out, the Russians and the Chinese and even the Mexicans and, you know, a lot of European Union countries. I watched a business forum on television that's being held in St. Petersburg, Russia. It's being attended by 10,000 people, all these economists and government officials, including people from Eastern Europe and Japan and almost every country in the world, and they all are looking to do business with China and the Russians. They won't say that publicly, But that's the whole meaning of them attending this conference, and they're very worried about what's going to happen to the economy internationally with Trump imposing these tariffs, and they're worried that it's going to maybe create a war. And wars have been created over tariffs and trade. So, you know, this is a real danger, too, and it's not something we should take lightly. Trump says he's engaged in, he says he's the biggest salesman the United States has ever had to foreign countries. But what's he selling to all these countries? He's selling them weapons. He just announced today that he's going to sell 35 of these fighter jets to a little Poland. What the heck is Poland going to do with these things?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and this does not solve the trade deficits with any of these countries. It's going to create bigger deficits, and it pushes these other countries, the peoples of those countries, further into poverty too, because they can't afford to pay the cost of this weaponry. You're talking, what is it, $100 million a plane, is it, or something like that? It's a ridiculous amount. And, you know, this is a lot of money for a little country like Poland. And then he's forced sales of these same fighter jets on Japan and Saudi Arabia. And, you know, it goes on and on. All that Trump is selling all over the world, he claims to be a good salesman. He's selling weapons for the military-industrial complex. That does not help the average working people here in this country or in those countries that are buying these weapons of war.
When I look at Trump, you know, he's not a reliable negotiator. He was negotiating with the Chinese. They came and they made various agreements in regards to trade last year. It was around May of last year. And then afterwards, everything that was discussed in these negotiations, he said, you know, we're not going to abide by what we have already discussed. They weren't going to abide by what was discussed in those negotiations due to the fact that they mentioned that the Chinese were abusing various technology secrets that they had in regards to in the manufacturing sector. So, you know, we saw the same thing with Iran, where Trump backed out of the joint commitment that other European countries made in regards to Iran. So when it comes to these trade wars, it seems like Trump, when you look at China, when you look at Iran, when you look at any country, it seemed like the trade wars is just another excuse that we're looking for a fight so we can get things on our terms. As we have seen before, when we look at the way Trump negotiate for this country, the negotiation is like might makes right. Deborah, what's your take on that?
I'm sorry, who?
Deborah.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, Alan said something,
I'll start with Alan. Alan,
well,
what was your thought on that?
He started.
And then we'll go to Deborah.
Geez, now I forgot what I was going to say.
Okay.
But, you know, don't we have people that work on these trade deals, and they work them out. They work with the other countries to work these out peacefully,
But Deborah, what I'm saying is, when you have a president that's going to send out a Twitter feed saying that we're going to disregard everything that the negotiators already discussed.
Yeah, and
because he creates something else that he said, this is something that I feel that needs to be brought out, and now those negotiations are null and void.
Yeah, and I can imagine what those people are just, what they're dealing with when you have the big boss come in and just mess everything up. And the thing of it is, he's not trying to work peacefully and nice with other countries to work out deals. He's bullying people. He's bullying everybody. He's bullying the whole world, and other countries are going to be afraid to even deal with the United States.
Alan, did you get your thought on that, what you wanted to say?
Well, yeah, Debbie pretty much said it, that, you know, Trump said today that the Chinese changed the terms of what they had agreed to. He turns everything on its head. It's not the Chinese that that reneged on the agreement that they had. It's Trump. And Trump has done this with every single country. No country can trust the United States to engage in any kind of trade or anything else anymore. And, you know, part of this, you know, the problem is that this can lead to war. You know, look what he's doing with Iran. You know, for years, if you eat pistachios, Iranian pistachios were the thing. Now people can't even get Iranian a thing like Iranian pistachios, and that's hurt the pistachio farmers in Iran. And you know, it hurts here too, because that was one of the highest quality pistachios in the world. So you know, you have all kinds of things like this going on at the same time. In Israel, the Israelis are burning down the trees, the fig trees and apricot trees of the Palestinians. And you know, where is that going to lead? And you know, you have these kinds of problems going on all over the world, and it's all instigated by imperialism. And at some point, you know, somebody could do something really bad, and it starts a big war, and the war gets bigger and bigger, and before you know it, you got World War III. And you know, World War II was largely over trade. Hitler and the Japanese wanted to control trade all over the world, and that was one of the things that helped instigate World War II. And it also helped instigate World War I. So you have all these things that seem like, well, it's just a little argument here or there, but they're not, because sooner or later somebody can get, you know, really pissed off, and before you know it, a war breaks out. And, you know, I think that's sort of where we're at right now, that we're very close to a big war breaking out. You can't have everybody in the world mad at you. And, you know, some countries, they don't have any way to counter the United States other than to engage in little acts of terrorism and stuff. And before you know it, it leads to a big war. People are not going to take this kind of crap. Trump can't dictate to the whole world. I think even some of the people on Wall Street are beginning to realize that, and that's why they're bringing Joe Biden forward. They want to have him as sort of a backup to Trump. But, you know, we're in a bad situation here. And it's going to get a lot worse before it ever gets better.
Matt, I would just like to elaborate a little bit more how these trade wars are affecting working people, because we know it's a tax on working people. We know that it really stagnates any type of growth in jobs. We know that you know, it affects the global economy. Just recently, a few days ago, the head of the International Monetary Fund, Christine Lagarde, she stated some earlier warnings that the U.S. and China, the trade wars between the two countries, is creating a cut in global growth, and is calling on Washington and Beijing to stand down from the escalating trade wars that they're having. But Matt, how, when we look at working people, how is this affecting working people in China? How is it affecting working people in the United States? How is it affecting workers in many of the countries that we trade with, when these trade wars keep escalating? Because at some point we see that the workers are going to pay the price, but tell us how.
Well, the workers always pay the price, because the trade wars result in higher prices in the countries engaging in them. And it's, of course, the workers that pay the higher prices, against wages that are stagnating or rolling back, because their production targets are lowered constantly. And so they're called upon to produce less because of the tariffs and sanctions and so on. And so, of course, it's hurting working people in an economic sense. But in addition to that, there's always the temptation on the part of those who are engaging in these trade wars to, once the economic consequences come home to roost, try to get the population behind actual military wars. You know, the examples of the First and the Second World War come to mind. The Cold War, that didn't happen because of mutually assured destruction. Okay. And that's sort of the sort of Damocles that's hanging over this whole thing that sort of separates it from a hot war, is that sort of Damocles of mutually assured destruction. Okay. The Russians can pretty well guarantee that they're not going to be attacked. The Chinese can pretty well guarantee that they're not going to be attacked. But the only way that any other country that's not, you know, in the U.S.-led NATO system can guarantee that it's not going to be attacked is to enter into another alliance system, okay, with the Russians and the Chinese. We're already seeing this, of course, with the Venezuelans and the Iranians. They are entering into a they're entering into an alliance system with the Russians and the Chinese, both of whom can defend themselves and can defend anybody else in their alliance system. Are the Mexicans going to have to take such a step? It's so early in the process that, you know, it's hard to see that the Mexican government would enter into an alliance with anybody. They're almost like Switzerland in that regard. They're very, very cautious about alliances. Last time I know of that they entered into an alliance was the Allied Alliance under, I don't even know if it was Lázaro Cárdenas. I think it was maybe his successor. They actually were formally joined the Allied side. But that was the last alliance I know that any Mexican government entered into. They, like the Swiss, are very, very wary of entering into an alliance. And to be fair, the agreements between the Iranians and the Venezuelans on the one hand, the Russians and the Chinese on the other hand, aren't technically alliance. Okay, they're mutual aid or mutual assistance. Okay, so It's not a hard to pass alliance treaty as such. Again, on the trade war front, if the overtures of the Mexican government in various directions fail to resolve the conflict, they are already exploring the possibility of shipping Pemex oil to China in return for Chinese goods. They're already doing that. Okay, again, it's on an economic front, but as the economic consequences of trade wars manifest themselves, it becomes more and more and more of a temptation for those who began the trade wars, and they find out they're not working, to actually try to militarize the conflict. Okay. After all, it was World War II, the end of the Great Depression, not so much the New Deal. Okay.
Right.
The New Deal maybe opened the door to end.
It opened the door. 25% of the Depression was we had come out of the Depression by 25%. The war ended the Depression.
That's right, World War II. So there is that temptation, but again,
right,
it is not doable. Okay, something like the Second World War has not been doable since 1949, when the Soviets began constructing their nuclear deterrent. Deterrence works, and so, like I say, in the case of the Russians and the Chinese, they already have the deterrent. Okay, and they can spread that umbrella if they so choose. And if in other countries they feel the need to deter U.S. aggression, which the Venezuelans and Iranians most certainly do. Okay. So you move on from that, and you go from deterrence to containment, which is the second Cold War strategy. And in seeking alternative economic relationships that circumvent the U.S., that go around the U.S., like the replacement of U.S. soybeans with Russian soybeans, as an example, then you go into the second stage of a Cold War, which is containment. Okay, trying to contain U.S. influence. And Trump is doing that. He gives the backhanded service to all kinds of interesting and good things. Okay. That he opposes. Because he opposes them, they gain support. Like, containment of the U.S. Even the EU, they're looking at this and they're saying, wait a second. NATO is supposed to be a defensive alliance, and yet we've gone on the offensive for decades. What's up with that? Okay, we've gone on the defensive in Yugoslavia. We've gone on the defensive in the Middle East, or the offensive, I should say, in the Middle East. Blah, blah, blah. And they end up making commitments they were never designed to make. And so they're openly questioning whether the EU, even as it's falling apart, should attempt to what the French did decades back, have a joint command separate, within NATO, but a joint command nonetheless. So the system that was, the Cold War system, Trump is doing huge wreckage to it. He's definitely walked away from the agreements of his predecessors, and that's one thing. But the Russians have reached the conclusion, reluctant as it is, very reluctant, that he is, and there's a big long Russian word that translates roughly as cannot be negotiated with. He cannot
be negotiated. What was that again?
The Russians, Sergei Lavrov, Vladimir Putin, and the rest have reached the conclusion
that sounds Greek to
Trump
me, but
cannot be negotiated with. He cannot be relied on.
He's not a reliable negotiator.
No, it's useless. It's like
it's like trying to negotiate with a liar. Who wants to negotiate with a liar?
Yeah, well, they have historical experience, both theirs and other people. Okay, the 1938 Munich Pact did not stop Hitler from violating it. Okay,
no.
When he invaded Bohemia and Moravia. The 1939 Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact did not stop Hitler from attacking the Soviet Union in 22 June. Appeasement don't work with these people. It only whets their appetite. That's what AMLO is going to discover, much to his chagrin. He's given in and, put troops on the border with Guatemala. Okay, what do we do for an encore? What can we get out of him now? Ha-ta-ta-ta. Or somebody else. Trump is already eyeing new steps to take against China to try to get them to do what AMLO just did. Okay, the same thing.
I'm just going to take a
concession.
I'm going to take a quick pause here. I just want to mention very briefly, I can just relate to my personal situation. Well, what I've experienced myself, the company I work for, I work for an auto dealer, which we have gone from selling around 475 cars a month to selling somewhere around 560 cars a month. But when you look at tariffs and when you look at trade wars, it always falls on the backs of workers. When I look at just the latest statistics where it showed that there was a projection of 200, it was added 75,000, the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows an increase of non-farm payrolls only at 75%, far below the 223,000 jobs added in April. What happened is those jobs lost, but the manufacturing sector, when you look at various companies out there, they still expect the same amount of production out of those workers that are still in those factories, the ones that are still in those jobs. Even though they may have an increase or the same, but it always falls on the backs of the workers. I'm just going to take a very quick pause here just to let our listeners know, once again, that they are tuned in to Socialist Can, 1 hour left. And our discussion today is Trump's trade wars benefiting Wall Street, hurting working people. And today we have on our regulars on our panel, Deborah Mackey, Alan Mackey, and also Matt Owen. And Deborah, could you just take maybe around half a minute just to mention about the program Left of Liberal coming on every Monday and what's coming on next week?
Yeah, it's Left of Liberal comes on at 7 p.m. on Monday Central Time. And we have a phone number if you want to contact us at 512-517-2708. We have a Facebook page, Left of Liberal, with hosts Alan and Debbie Mackey. And you can look for the White Peace Poppy to find us. Also, email address at leftofliberal@outlook.com. And then we're going to have, Alan can tell you who we're going to have on next week.
We're going to have Daryl Rankin, who's building international support in North America for the people that are struggling against the severe repression in Sudan. So that'll be an interesting program.
Alan, could you just take just around 30 seconds and mention about our general membership meeting that we have coming up in August?
Yeah, we're going to have a general membership meeting on August 10th here in Austin at the Live Oak Unitarian Church. It'll be from 8 o'clock in the morning till 6 o'clock in the evening, and we invite people to come. If you can't make it, let us know your ideas and, you know, what direction you think you'd like to see the Socialist Connection Action Network go in. So we need your input, and we need your support, and we need your activity especially.
We're and that'll be August 10th right there in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, we're looking for people to start setting up locals of the Socialist Connection Action Network. And
we've already had a few people that have indicated that they would like to organize in their various states, so I'm very excited about that, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm not certain where the there's an echo that's that just started occurring within the last few minutes, so I'm not certain exactly where that's coming from. But anyway, we're going to still move on. More and more states are moving toward higher minimum wage, $12 to $15 per hour. Congress has refused to debate increasing the federal minimum wage from the $7.25 an hour. Matt, are these trade wars creating conditions to where Congress had giving themselves a way to suppress raising the minimum wage, Matt?
Well, it would make any raising the minimum wage problematic, because it would automatically factor into the trade balances, and so it would be offset, just as the tariffs result in a lowered real wage for everybody. Okay, you have a round of tariffs, right? Those are tacked onto the prices, and so basically that lowers the real wage. Every single time that happens, that lowers the real wage. So basically, you know, even if you were to raise a minimum wage, that would go back into the tariff regime. So basically, it's a matter of class struggle. And the tariffs, which have always been marketed as a way to correct for unfair labor practices in a country by slapping tariffs and sanctions on them, would not work. Now, a contrast. In the past, before, you know, when that claim was made that, okay, there is a country that is engaging in unfair trade practices, and therefore we are going to compensate for that with a tariff or a sanction or quota or whatever, that was taken to an international body that arbitrated such things. Okay, a claim was filed against the government that was supposedly engaging in these unfair practices to give them a chance to cease and desist before the tariffs or sanctions were put into place. And if they were put into place, they were put into place under that framework. Okay. And that happened many times before Trump. Trump just does it. He just pulls it out of the hat. He doesn't ask nobody. He doesn't take it before any international organization because he wants to disempower such organization. Okay. He wants to get rid of the entire international regime under which such lawful sanctions and tariffs and all this were brought. So he wants to dismantle all that. So he doesn't even ask. He just, you know, twitters, and next thing you know, off you go. Okay, he just tweets. Okay, it's a fiat thing. So he's taken the framework under which such things were done in the past in response to a complaint that was lodged before they were done. Okay, and then they were done if there was no response to the complaint. Okay, he's taken and ripped up that, just like he's ripped up every other international framework that the U.S. Works within. Okay, even though those were set up, you know, to advantage the U.S., at least they did have some mechanisms of accountability to them. And he's ripped that to ribbons. So he's basically, you know, trying to construct a truly unilateral system, okay? And since the Western side won the Cold War in 92, there was a consensus that they didn't have to do that, that the international community was on their side, supportive, blah, 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 okay? But that didn't satisfy them. Okay. And so they took that which advantaged them terrifically and destroyed it. Okay. It's, you know, this present administration, they're like somebody holding a gun to their own heads and, you know, nobody moves if the kid gets it. Okay.
Right.
So they shoot themselves all the time. Okay. Unfortunately, they shoot everybody else too.
Right. I want to ask all of you this question because we realize that we have a very impotent Congress, very impotent. What authority does the U.S. Congress have over these tariffs and all these actions that this administration has taken? Because I hear absolutely no discussion or anything coming out of the Capitol, when I say the Capitol, out of Congress, in regards to debating these tariffs issues. The rest of the world are talking and discussing how, including the IMF, how these trade wars are affecting trade worldwide. But every time you look at anything on the internet or you hear anything on television or you read anything, it's all about the Mueller report and what is taking place, the fighting that is taking place within Congress. Alan, what authority does Congress have where they can tell this administration to back off, don't destroy the global economy?
Well, Congress has the final say in all of these trade agreements, and so far they haven't exercised any kind of authority at all. They haven't.
I haven't seen any restraints.
No, none at all. And eventually, if any new agreement is actually arrived at with Trump and any of these other countries, Congress is going to have to approve that. Otherwise, it doesn't exist.
They're going to have to approve what?
They're going to have to approve whatever agreement Trump arrives at, I guess.
No, I'm talking about the tariffs, because these tariffs have already been imposed.
Well, I think that Trump is violating the Constitution because Congress is the one that's supposed to have the say.
Tax.
In what, and I think that Congress is allowing Trump to violate the Constitution over and over again in every single area, including with the tariffs and these trade agreements, because Congress has not asserted itself at all like you said, the only thing we hear about is Russiagate and the Mueller report, and the Democrats are content to harp on that. I think one thing you started to mention, Stuart, that's very important in all of this and how working people are going to be affected, is that, you know, I've been reading in all these trade and economic journals and everything about productivity. All the Wall Street corporations are complaining that productivity is down. And this is a signal that that they're going to use these trade agreements and the tariffs and all this confusion that Trump has created to get more work out of fewer workers. And the workers that are, remain on the job are going to have to do more than what many more workers are doing before. And this is where this is headed. And I think that they will use it as an excuse to say we can't raise the minimum wage because we have to compete with these other countries. And they're putting the other countries in the position where they have to have lower wages too. So it's a vicious cycle. And, you know, the working class is going to have to fight their way out of this. And Congress isn't going to do anything to defend working people when it comes to the tariffs or any kind of trade agreements or any treaties or anything. It's all in Trump's lap, and Congress is allowing Trump to get away with everything. They're abdicating their constitutional responsibility.
Well, one of the things that you just brought up, Alan, and you and Deborah, when you go shopping, I shop at a company, a store, it's called Winco, based out of Washington and Idaho. And before, when I used to go there, it's like a warehouse grocery store. Before I used to go there, there'd be like 7, 8, 9, sometimes 10 check stands would be open. But very interesting, I went in Winco the other day just to pick up like around 4 or 5 different items. And here they had 2 check stands that were open, and the self-serve must have had like around 50, at least 15 people waiting in line so they could use the self-serve. To me, it was like they're getting rid of the checkers and they're bringing in automated machines so people can check out their own groceries. So subsequently, what they're doing is they're cutting back on workers. I mean, so that they can protect the bottom line. We have talked about it time and time again. We're talking about how Congress is not doing their job. $7.25 an hour is ridiculous. Deborah, what kind of wages are we as socialists? What are we calling for in regards to income for workers? Deborah?
Well, we probably need at least $20 an hour to or more to keep up with the cost of living, I would say.
I need a living wage.
Yeah.
I'm not even getting a living wage. I can't pay my bills. Can you? Can Alan?
Barely.
Can Matt? Matt, can you pay your bills?
I
think you're at work right now, right, Matt?
Yeah, I am. And I come from a region where most of the people here in the IE, the Inland Empire of Southern California, cannot pay their bills, are not making a living wage. That's the majority of them.
Alan, can you pay your bills?
No. I'm heavily in debt.
I'm looking at going into retirement in 10 weeks. I don't know how I'm going to make it, you know? You know, I can't go out there and cut grass. My feet are bad, you know? I mean, you know, when you look at part-time jobs, there's no part-time jobs because, you know, they don't have jobs even for teenagers. So when we look at jobs, the jobs have become really stagnated in this country. And when it comes to good-paying jobs in manufacturing and industry, then you have an administration that has gone on the attack of the working class in industry, and they're putting all of us out of business.
Yeah,
Deborah, what's your ideas on it? You got me all riled up here, Deborah.
Well, Alan was going to say something. I'll let him say what he was going to say.
Alan, what is your take on it?
Well, I think, you know, the Democrats have created gimmicks. They use election gimmicks around this minimum wage issue. Bernie Sanders is promoting this $15 an hour. But There's no scientific backing for it. I think
none.
What's been needed all along is a living minimum wage requires that the minimum wage be tied to the actual cost of living and recalculated every quarter or at least once a year in line with the actual cost of living. I was just
and
reading
they
have an
turned
article
that into
the
a
other,
gimmick.
What?
And that has been turned into a gimmick, how they recalculate it.
Yeah, exactly. I was just reading an article the other day. I forgot who put it out, some liberal think tank. And they said that if the minimum wage had kept pace with the same way that the bonuses and the salaries for these corporate CEOs and CFOs have gone up, and CCOs, whatever you call them, the big shots in the Wall Street corporations, that today we would have a minimum wage of $33 an hour. So, you know, you've got all these, you've got these people at the top, these billionaires and, you know, millionaires. Some of them are getting close to becoming trillionaires probably. And these people are making so much money, but how do they make that money? They make that money, they make these profits by not paying working people a living wage. You know, you think about it. Why would any worker or any politician or employer expect a worker to go to work at any job and not receive a living wage in line with the actual cost of living? So in other words, you know, none of us can make ends meet because we're not being paid a living wage. Even auto workers today, you know, that are making on the high end of $20 and into $30 and $40 an hour for some of the people in the trades, you know, those wages have not gone up compared to the salaries and bonuses of the corporate executives. And these corporate executives are being paid high bonuses and salaries on the basis of how many workers they can eliminate and how far they can push the worker standard of living down. That's what their bonuses are made based on. Profits go up as our standard of living goes down. I mean, that's the way the system operates. And this is what we got to see. You know, and, you know, when we look at, they try and pit U.S. workers against Chinese workers and workers in Mexico and every place else. But as working people, you know, we should understand that when workers in one place improve their standard of living, that helps us too. And it helps push wages up all the way around. No country has ever brought so many people out of poverty as China has. And, you know, that's got to be looked at. And Jimmy Carter pointed out that, you know, with the United States engaged in all these wars, which is also an attack on our cost of living, this country hasn't been able to provide its people with the kind of social programs that are required to live decent lives. I mean, that's part of the standard of living, being provided medical care and health care, a good education, decent low-cost transportation, decent housing. This is all part of the standard of living, being able to go to the grocery store and, you know, buy what we need to live on. You know, we hear all the time, oh, our stores are just full of stuff. Yeah, like Yeltsin came to, I can remember when Boris Yeltsin came to this country and he went through a grocery store and he picked up stuff. He says, oh, look at these steaks, look at this, look at that. But he didn't talk about the price. He didn't talk about can working people afford to buy these things that he was picking up that he thought it was so great that capitalism was providing. You know, when you go to the store, what can you actually afford to buy? I went to the store today, and I saw meat that was priced at $17 and $18 a pound. You know, what
Great.
Working person can afford that? If you, you know, if you want to give yourself a treat, you can maybe afford a piece of meat like that every couple months or something, but you're not going to have something like that to eat every day. You know, you don't make enough money to pay for it. And this is the situation that we're in, and it's going to just keep getting worse. We're not going to be able to survive pretty soon if we allow these capitalists to get away with what they're doing, if we allow Trump to get away with what he's doing, because this whole attack, you know, he talks about attacking other countries, but what he's really intent on is driving down the standard of working people here in this country, because that pushes profits up.
Just like he did with all the companies, all the businesses and companies that he is, has operated.
Exactly.
I have another three minutes here, and I just want each one of you to take around a minute just to elaborate on this. The guidelines for trade, commerce, manufacturing and industry, who holds that authority in this country? Is it Wall Street now, or is it Congress? Alan?
Well, it's definitely Congress goes along with what the Chamber of Commerce and the National Association of Manufacturers want from the government. So, you know, those policies are anti-worker policies and pro-big business policies from the monopoly capitalist.
Deborah, what do you say? Who's running everything? Is it Wall Street or is it Congress?
Wall Street, definitely. They drive prices up with the stocks, and they drop them as needed when they're ready to buy, and they drive the price up when they are ready to make profit. They're the ones that control everything.
You know, I think millions of Americans had the right idea when they went out in the streets and was Occupy Wall Street. It was Occupy Wall Street rather than Occupy Congress, because they knew that Wall Street were the movers and shakers. Matt, what is your take on that? Who's in charge of the show?
Well, if they would but take the power they have, the working class.
Very good.
Direct action gets the goods, and nobody knows that like the Chinese workers, who have been taking direct action to improve their situation year after year for decades. Every year, they break their own record for direct action against foreign companies, against the Chinese government. They don't care. They know they've been left out, and they have been fighting that, and they have been winning. Okay, year after year, they have been winning. You want to talk about a response to, you know, the proliferation of automation. They are doing it. Okay, the Chinese
and I'm
workers,
hearing the music.
The Chinese government, the Chinese workers. And we could be doing the
same
thing.
And once again, I want to thank our listeners for joining Socialist Ken. 1 hour left. I want to thank our panelists for joining the program and sharing a lot of good information. Be certain to go to the link, Socialist Ken, 1 hour left. And listen to the program in detail, Trump's trade wars benefiting Wall Street, hurting working people. And be certain to tune into the program next week at the same time, and also listen to Left of Liberal every Monday. Look forward to having you to join us next week. Thanks again. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thanks for having us.
Night-night.